When we started the show in 2019, we did a Taylor Swift Fearless episode, and then Scooter Braun bought, and I did like a parody song on that episode, but Scooter Braun brought the rights to that song. So I'm going to be like, just a little housekeeping. I'm going to do a re-record of that song as
like Andrew's version.
Yeah. I'm going to do an Andrew's version of like this parody I made in 2019. So I had the rights to it. So, okay. So here we go. 'Cause I've been meaning to listen to that, but I've been busy with looking up vids of pizza rats. Don't forget the gifts, but I've been meaning to listen to that. So shame on me, but frankly, who would actually give a crap when we're dead in the cold, hard ground? Where will be rubble, rubble, rubble? Will all be rubble, rubble, rubble? Okay, so your move, Scooter. All right, now let's start the episode.
That's pretty good.
Remember that record that you bought me like 2 years ago? Well, I just remembered that it's sitting in the closet, so I called you up just to tell you I've been meaning to listen to that. I've been meaning to listen to that. Why don't you come over and talk about it? Ooh, ooh, ooh. Why don't you come over and talk about it?
Oh boy. Welcome to the show. Welcome to I've Been Meaning to Listen to That, the podcast where we go through albums we've been meaning to listen to and use it as a conduit to learn about each other and our guests. I'm Andrew Ambrose Lee.
I'm Harper Thompson.
I'm Stanley Philippe.
Before we get into the episode, do you have any feedback on my hilarious song?
Fire.
That was great. I loved it. No notes.
Was that from the vault or was that on the
actual? Yeah, that was from the vault. Okay. Like, yeah.
Definitely play it at your next show. I think that should be the vault song.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It was for the Hunger Games soundtrack. It's really popular. But yeah, welcome to the show. Let's just introduce her. She's a four-time guest. She's one of our favorite guests. She's wonderful. She's a host of Best of Friends and just as a mom and stuff. It's Erin Mallory Long.
Yay.
It's very funny, however, since becoming a parent, that always becomes one of my descriptors. And she's a mom.
You birthed life and made more human beings.
I hope the connotation is how does she do it and not we don't care anymore.
You should put that on your LinkedIn. But welcome to the show. Yeah. Welcome to the show. We're here to talk about 1989 Taylor's version. Wait, sorry. 1989 Taylor's version. It's a whisper. Let's just get straight into it. Like, let's talk about Taylor in 2023. What is your take on her now? Like, how does she reach you these days?
Well, I went to Eras Tour this year, so that was fun. We went to Vegas for it. Really good time. I enjoy... I'm a Taylor fan in a way where I don't like to like get involved in her love life usually. Yeah. I don't really give a shit. However, obsessed with her dating Travis Kelce. I'm like, this guy gets it. He's like, she's number one. I'm a football player. I'm like, I'm in on this. Like, I love it. He's tall. Like, I'm like, this is great. Like, this is good. It's all very heteronormative, but I'm on board with it. I like it. I think she needs a turn to this, you know, she needs a turn to like just a football player. I like it. That's where I'm at with Taylor right now. I'm also at a place of like, I will listen to everything new that comes out, right? Like I'm immediately going to start listening to Taylor's version of everything, but I'm a little overwhelmed. It's been a lot. So it's kind of like, do I want to dedicate my whole life to only listening to Taylor Swift? No. So that's kind of where I'm at, where it's like, I'm almost at an oversaturation point with her, but like, not in a rude way, just kind of like, I just need a break. So it's like, I'm really glad that I saw the tour, I don't need to watch the movie. I'm just like, here we are. We're in this spot.
It is reaching like the like Marvel like Endgame. Like it's like kind of at that point yeah. where it's like, I wonder how this can sustain itself at this pace, at this like growth rates. Like I do. And like, I don't like hate her. I don't like have any negative feelings about her necessarily. Yeah. But it's like, I do feel like that racist girl that like Gayle King interviewed where she's where I'm like, OK, Tail, enough. You know, like I feel like that a little bit. Hopefully that joke will land at home. It did land in the room, but
I mean, I got the reference. It's just a lot. It's just a lot of stuff. I'm sort of tired for her is kind of part of it, too. Like I'm sort of like a lot of stuff to be juggling and doing and like. That tour, I mean, I don't know if any of you guys went to that tour, but man, it's a long show. It's fucking exhausting as an audience member to stand there. Like, you're like, it's been 3 hours and we still have a half hour to go. Like, this is a lot.
Sean, cut my Gayle King joke also.
Like, no, keep it in. Keep it in.
Either cut it out or keep it in and then keep me saying cut that joke out, like one of those.
I'm gonna keep referencing it so you can't cut it out.
Oh my gosh. Oh, that's good. That's good.
What about you guys? Like, what about Harper and Stanley? Where are you at with Taylor in 2033?
Yeah, well, I feel like we talked about this a little bit on, I don't know, whichever the purple one was that we just talked about. I can't remember the name of that album right now. But the purple one, you know, we all know what I'm talking about.
I do.
I also saw her this year. I'm wearing one of my bracelets I made. I'm wearing my Out of the Woods bracelet. I agree. It was a really long show. The funniest thing I think about seeing her live was that like everyone was standing for the whole thing, but then she started doing All Too Well 10-minute version and everyone sat down and it was like, because the song is 10 minutes long. It's like, we've been standing for 2 hours. Like, how are we all just tired now? But anyway, so yeah, it's long. I enjoyed it, but like, I don't know how she does that like every day. Yeah, I don't know. I'm also a little burnt out on the Taylor's versions, to be honest. Like basically what I do when they come out now is like, I'll go through my Spotify, unlike all of the original version, and then just like the songs on the from Taylor's version. And then listen to the vault songs a couple times and then just kind of call it a day.
I do the unliking, reliking as well on Spotify. I go through and do that. I feel like that's the least I can do. I'm like, all right, let me go do that.
Every little bit counts. It all helps.
I'm like, you're welcome. So.
You're the person who got her from like 99 million to a billion. You're the
yeah, exactly.
Straw.
Exactly.
What about you, Stanley? Where are you at with Taylor? What's your history of Taylor and stuff?
Yeah, it was really cool when Travis Kelce, the greatest, arguably greatest tight end of all time, started dating this indie artist. I was like, wow, I should probably look up this Taylor Swift person. come to figure out she's like the biggest artist since, you know, sliced bread. And I was going to say what you said, Andrew, about Marvel. Like, she is, for me, in phase three of Marvel, which is where you get Infinity War and Endgame, right? Like, this is like, there's been such a buildup through her eras. And now we get this perfect convergence of revisiting old material, biggest tour of all time, dating a really amazing football player. And so open up that demographic as well. Like, it's just like everything. It's almost poetic that she's now cheer captain, I guess, because she's dating.
Oh, wow.
The head of the football team. And then her old self is on the bleachers, or Scooter Braun is on the bleachers watching, saying like, oh, fuck. I don't know about oversaturation for me, because I was never really like a huge Taylor Swift consumer. And so I don't know if I feel the same thing that a lot of fans might be feeling, what you're all expressing. And I was listening to this podcast and he said that they're like, they're hoping that Taylor now goes through her last two re-releases real quick, like get that done maybe by the end of this year. So then 2024 could be almost like a chill new album at some point, but like no more of this like constant Taylorisms all the time. Like she is a McDonald's. She's McDonald's. Like, she is what Drake aspires to be. I think Drake would be better served revisiting and re-recording, you know, Take Care versus dropping For All the Dogs. You know what I mean? Like that's a better look for Drake than doing the new stuff. So I mean, she's she's pop royalty. Like, she, I don't know. Oh, she's a goat. She's a goat. She's not my goat, but she is the goat, you know, in 2023.
I think like she might be the most important artist right now. Like, she is like probably a little higher than Beyonce. And it's like, so like, she's incredible. It's incredible what she did in business. Incredible how prolific she is. Incredible her work ethic, how high quality the work is. Like, people complain about this album, like, it's not as good as, you know, the original version. But to me, it's like, well, get mad at like Scooter Braun and Scott Borchetta and like those guys instead of her and Jack Antonoff and all those like other people, those colonizers. Get mad at them instead of like the artists, you know? Yeah. So she's like provided this like incalculable amount of joy for people. Like, she's like an inspiration and created this world centered on love, authenticity, creativity. She's inspired like countless artists to pick up a guitar and express themselves, like Billie Eilish, Olivia Rodrigo, Phoebe Bridgers, just as like the top dogs, like right now, like in terms of that field, like she's inspired them directly. And then she's also inspired people to like strive for that fairy tale ending instead of like just settling for like what the world just provides for you as a young woman. I do feel jealous as someone who loved Kanye's art pre-2022. Like, I am like really jealous of like Taylor stans who can openly express their love for this arts and the positive parts of their philosophy without like worrying about hurting someone or like tacitly endorsing bad behavior or something like that. I do love it in terms of like the conversation between the two artists. Like, I do think they're like the two most important artists of the 21st century. Like, and how like Taylor gets to reap the benefits of white privilege while Kanye gets to reap the benefits of like patriarchy a little bit. Like, it's kind of like interesting how one succeeded, how one didn't, how one's behind, how one's else. Like, and also the difference is like Taylor's a nice person. Kanye's not, he's an horrible asshole. It's just like, so yeah, at the same time, I am like, okay, Taylor, enough. I'm also like, okay, I'm tired of this. I wonder if there's going to be a downfall. I wonder if there's going to be a fall from grace. She seems too smart to do a J.K. Rowling or like a Amy Schumer type of situation. But I wonder, I wonder how this is going to sustain for this long. And like, it's also, it feels a little like probably a safe bet to not go. All those other billionaires were bad, but this one, I think she'll figure it out.
Yeah. And I think when you talk about importance, what makes her really fascinating to me is she is the wildest dream. Like, she is the only artist that can pierce through the noise of the imbalances and inequalities and seemingly like nonstop causes of social destruction that's happening around the world. It's like with Taylor, it's no one really cares to say like, hey, like, where do you stand on anything? But with other artists that have like the crown of importance, they then get almost the responsibility of social contribution. And not to say that she doesn't contribute socially, it's just she doesn't have to say anything. And it's wild that like the biggest artist of all time right now doesn't have to say anything about, you know, a shooting that happens in America every single day. You know,
well, I think that she did go through that journey, right? Of like getting called out a lot for not saying anything, right? She did go through that journey. So then she did sort of like at least make her like, I'm a liberal. That's kind of like all that happened. No judgments. Like, I think that is worthwhile. I think that's worthwhile for her to say. She like stood up about like stuff going on in Tennessee, which is always important. Like, Tennessee is a messed up place. Like, I can say that a lot of my family is from there, you know, like she has taken a stand on things, but I do think she's now sort of reached this Beyonce territory of like, no one's really going to be like, hey, you should be like on front facing videos saying stuff. Like, no, she shouldn't, you know, like, we don't want that. Katy Perry has tried doing stuff like that. She always is bad at it. You know, like, it's like, we don't actually need this. Like, we don't need Katy Perry out here supporting Rick Caruso for LA mayor. You know, it's like, no.
Yeah.
Not helpful. So it's like, I don't think Taylor would do that anymore. And I always think that what she needs to be doing is having like long sit downs with Beyonce, where Beyonce tells her, like, you need to protect yourself. Like, because Beyonce is so good at that stuff. She's so good at sort of like, I'm separate from this. Like, you're not going to see me. Like, Taylor's not like lurking on Tumblr anymore, like doing shit like that. You know what I mean? Like, I think perhaps at some point something got through to her where it's like, she needs to be like up here with Beyonce. Cause it really is the two of them. It's them. Like, that's who it is.
Yeah. And it's true. Cause it was like with Beyonce and Jay, like, culturally there is criticism with that. It's like, hey, like, Jay, like, how dare you partner with the NFL, right? How dare you tell us to not kneel anymore? And I don't know if the, like you said, the advice, like, maybe that's what it was. Like, Beyonce was like, yo, Taylor, like, honestly, like, if you put yourself out there too much, then you will be held accountable by quote unquote your culture, and it may not be pretty, you know, because it's hard to balance being a billionaire and him trying to be, you know, connected to social reform.
This is just like, hey, like, two greats can exist. Two greats can do different things. And also, like, these two greats can do different things than like someone like maybe on the ground who's like trying to help, like, make society better in a different way. I think like Taylor and Beyonce just show this aspirational kind of, this is what you can accomplish within this system. And then maybe people who are in it a little more can go, now let's change the system so it's more equitable for everyone too. So that's pretty sick. So let's talk about 1989, Taylor's version, and also just like this new Taylor's version, also the original. Do any of y'all have like any history with the original version of it?
Yeah, I mean, it was, it's my favorite.
Harper, I mean, yeah.
1989 is my favorite Taylor Swift album, I will say. I love 1989. That was like the one that I feel like I really got into Taylor Swift. Yeah, Red. So Red had like songs that I liked on it, right? Like, I really enjoyed, Trouble, even. I don't know. That was like kind of like, that was very college to me.
You enjoyed Rubble, my parody that I did at the beginning of the show.
Exactly. Yes, I liked that one a lot. Yeah, so I had songs I liked off of Red, but I wasn't fully bought into the whole album. 1989 was the one where I was listening to it from start to finish, like, pretty regularly, and I was really into it. So that was a big one for me.
Stanley, do you have like a 1989 like history?
Back then when it first dropped, I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe Taylor's leaving the country lane completely. What a sellout. And now I'm like, oh my gosh, like, she is genius, because this is pop 101. If you taught a class on pop music, like, you just play this album and then say, any questions? Because it is what pop music is supposed to sound. I mean, the mixture of melodies and songwriting, and just like growth, like, she's growing into, I mean, Welcome to New York, right? She's growing into the quote unquote, you know, modern woman. However, I mean, who am I to define that? But however it is defined.
No, let's have you do it.
let's be real. I probably should talk about it. So I think it just sounds like her actually arriving in New York City and being like, holy fuck, I'm not in Nashville anymore, but let's go. Let's see what happens. You know, it's Sex in the City for Gen Z.
So I don't know this for sure, but like, apparently, like, with Red, she wanted to go in a more pop direction, but her label kind of stopped her. And so this is fine, like, stepping into New York, quote unquote, which is like kind of, obviously it's New York, but it's also, it seems like, metaphorically into young adulthood, metaphorically into pop, as in like just like my own creative autonomy. But going back a little bit, my preconceived notions on 1989 was that, so when I first, this is like when I first kind of was aware of Taylor Swift more like consciously, it always was playing in the background, like, oh, country star, oh, she's cool and stuff like that. And then like 1989, like, I remember like one of my crushes like was super into this album, so I was like, I kind of pretended to be super into it and be like, oh, I listen to Taylor Swift too. And then like And then, you know, that didn't work out. So, like, and then, unfortunately, because of that foundation of dishonesty. Also, she didn't like me very much. Yeah, but 1989, like, it's great. It's still, like, even though I was kind of, like, pretending, it wasn't that hard to pretend to love it. You know, it was still, like, it's still, they're still shaking it off on it. There's still Blank Space. There's still all these songs that are so phenomenal. So as I was getting deeper into my Taylor fandom, I haven't listened to 1989 since then. In my head, I start to go, maybe 1989 is bad. Maybe it's bad now. Like, maybe it's not very good because all these other albums and that one's pop and stuff. But then listening to it this time, I'm like, oh, this might be one or two. This might be, it's perfect. It is just perfect. So let's go through themes of this album. What do you think this album's about?
Well, obviously, it's about Thanos collecting all of the Infinity Stones.
Yeah, the 1989 stone, the, like, you know, the purple one stone.
Yeah.
Thanos is the purple one. It's about him.
The purple one.
Yeah, that guy.
No, but this is the moment where, you know, where it's like, I am Iron Man, like, where she's like, I am Taylor Swift, right? Like, it's like, and I'm here to now dominate pop music forever. You know, like, I think one of the big themes is like the joyful, there's, for me, there's like a real joy throughout this album, even though, like, there are moments where, like, you know, they're just talking about breakups and whatnot. But, like, overall, I felt like really happy and light listening to the majority of this album. So the idea of fresh air to the sound and to pop music. And I'm trying to think about what pop music was like in 2015, but she certainly is capturing the lighter side for me, at least.
But it's also like you're in New York and you, like, go to New York for the first time and you set your, like, suitcase down in your apartment and you open the window. It smells like shit. It, like, smells like shit. But you're also, like, romanticizing it. And, like, it's like Girls and Sex in the City. Kind of, like, you're also like this freedom and this also, like, now that you're free, there's this anxiety of, like, oh no, like, I have so many choices. And, like, but also, like, dating isn't what I thought it was when I was a kid. And it's, but it's also, like, really exhilarating. But it's also, like, I'm a sensitive person. I really, like, I'm still that sensitive kid from Nashville or Pennsylvania, wherever she's from. I'm still that also. And I get affected. And then also, like, she's a celebrity and everyone's looking at her. It's like, there's that Mike Birbiglia bit where he's like, when he does something embarrassing, he's like, well, at least no one saw that. Like, Taylor, everything is, like, recorded as if it's like a museum. And, like, I talk about this in the Olivia Rodrigo episode where that seems like a nightmare for an anxious person. That sounds like a nightmare for an artist or someone who is just, like, trying to express and trying to be, who's young and trying to figure things out. And then every single thing is documented in a way. So I think it's her navigating that too.
But I think that's also why you go to New York. Like, I am someone who, I'm from upstate New York. I went to college at NYU. So, like, I did move to New York at 18, you know, like the day after my 18th birthday, I moved down to college in New York. And this album feels like that to me. Like, it feels like that feeling. New York is amazing. It's my favorite place. And it's like, it feels like that experience of going there. And so I think it's like, you are Taylor Swift and you can't do anything without anyone seeing, except that you're in New York. So you actually can, you can blend and you can do stuff and you can have your life and you can, like, feel this magic of being in your 20s and being just sort of, like, in New York and in the feeling of the city. Like, I love that the album opens with Welcome to New York. Like, I think it's perfect. And it's like, that's what you're supposed to be taking with it. It's like, here is my journey. Now I'm in New York. I have some independence. I'm a little bit older. I'm, like, have these different situations. And, like, she's Taylor Swift, but you do have a sense of a little bit of anonymity in New York that you don't get anywhere else.
Especially if you, like, go in, like, a suitcase and, like, someone rolls you around and stuff. Like, no one knows you're that suitcase.
Exactly.
So that's very interesting.
Aaron goes, exactly. That was perfect. That's exactly the feeling that she, that Aaron felt moving to New York. She's exactly. Like, I'm in a suitcase being rolled around.
It's like, it's just, the whole thing is like what you feel in New York, which is main character energy, right? It's like, you feel like you are having this singular experience, but you're also with all these people. And it's like, that's what she captured. And that's why it's relatable. That's why it's like, that's what you feel when you're in your 20s in New York. Like, that's what it feels like. And it's just like such a perfect, I think I hadn't realized that's why I love this album so much, but I think that's what it is.
Yeah. So the thing I really like about this, I feel like this is maybe one of her most romantic albums and like kind of like positive romantic albums. Right. And I think it's a little bit because there's like a fantasy element to it where I like, she had said something about like, on one of the songs, I forget which one it was, but maybe it was like New Romantics. She had heard that her ex, obviously, I think Harry, because this whole album is a Harry album, but had gone to like gone on a trip to somewhere with his new girlfriend. And she was feeling kind of down about it. But she was like, you know what? I can just like imagine whatever I want. I feel like this is one of the first albums where she was kind of separating from like, I'm telling my story exactly. She's like, I'm going to come up with a different story to tell. And so I think that's one of the things that makes this such like an upbeat, positive, kind of fun and romantic album is that she's just kind of dreaming things up for herself. So I think that's one of the kind of overarching things on this album.
And like speaking to both Aaron and your point, there's a like a social realism to that, like where even though Taylor Swift is so unrelatable in so many ways, you can relate to what, you know, being a young adult, like going to New York for the first time, or like it's kind of like going on this divergent fantasy path when your current reality is unpleasant. And like this is the anthem for that. And I also just think it's like the other, it does feel like, to bring him up one more time, like it does feel like Taylor Swift's like Graduation, where it's like those are two like decade defining pop albums, and they're both joyfully exuberant while also being kind of beneath their songwriting ability, while also like not compromising on their vision. And then like there's so many like anthems on both those albums where it's like that people who are just like regular people can like go through their lives and go like inspired, and like kind of their life is decorated with this music that is so like uplifting and so like that allows you to romanticize your life as you're living it. So
yeah, and you know what I love about a lot of these songs is, and this is my favorite type of Taylor writing, is conversational singing.
Yeah.
Like Blank Space works so well because it's like, how you doing? Where you, man? I can show mm-hmm. you. And it's not like, and oh my God, look at that face. Like it's just like her walking on, you know, Madison Ave or whatever street in New York. And
First Avenue, Second Avenue, Third yeah. Avenue. Yeah. Uh-oh, a hot dog cart.
Exactly. And like, and she's talking with her friend and it's just like, how you doing? Where you been? Like, you know, and so I think that makes it so accessible to so many people. And I like that comparison because it's that less is more. Like, yeah, she can write way better songs and she has since. But it's like, because everyone can simply relate to a blank space and writing someone's name there as hoping to be with that person and knowing how it's going to be like shitty most likely at the end of it, but God, it's so romantic, the like dream about what could happen, it's great. Like this is like, it's like it's like Taylor realized like I can stay where I'm at and this is, you know, really great like high level artistry, or I can take the elevator and then go to the penthouse. You know, go to the Soho penthouse and look at the view up top and then tell everyone, hey, it's so great up here and you can maybe get here too, you know, like that moment. And then Thanos snaps and then we're yeah, like, oh, like, shit, 5 years
half
later
of them disappear. Yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone shakes their hand at the sky, the purple one.
It's going to be forever or it's going to go down in flames.
That's mm-hmm. right. That's exactly
that famous
she was talking about Marvel quote. Cinematic yes. universe.
Thanos like, definitely said that to Thor before he cut his head off. She's like, well, yep. It's going to be forever or we'll go down in flames. Dead.
To Stanley's point about like the conversational nature, it's conversational, but it's also like pop excellence. It like you got Max Martin, you got Shellback, you got Antonoff and like Tedder, like all working on this album. And then it's like with her poetic, elevated by her poetic instincts. Like, it's not just like some dumb like writing these songs. Like, it's not like, I'm not going to even say any names, but like, it's like not like it's like so lovingly made and so intellectually crafted, and it respects you as an audience member. Like, it's really, that's like the big difference. Like, some people, it feels like they're just like putting stuff in a stew because they'll be like, I don't know, they'll like it. I don't know. Who cares?
It's funny too, because I historically do not agree with Taylor's lead single choices. And so when Shake It Off was released, I was like, I'm not going to like this album. Like, I was just like, nah, like, this isn't going to be. And then I still listened to it. And I love Shake It Off in the context of the album. I love where it comes in the album. Like, it's perfect. Like, that's fine. Like, just reading that track list, I was like, yeah, this is great. Like, that's a great order. Like, I think it's one of her best ordered albums somehow. Like, it's just like the way, like, when the song ends, you like the next song you anticipate and you want that to start. Maybe it's just because I've listened to it 7,500 times, but it's like, that's what you want. You want mentally like that next thing. Like, it goes on a journey that you're like, yeah, this makes sense and this is great, you know?
Like, well, like, to all our points, this makes sense and this is great. Let's take a quick break. Click. Welcome to the show. Welcome to I've Been Meaning to Listen to That. Welcome back. We're here to talk 1989, Taylor's version. Let's go through highlight songs first. We probably have a lot of highlights. Aaron, what's a highlight song for you?
It's the same that's a highlight song for me in the original, because, and it's Out of the Woods, because I just skipped the title when I was talking, because when I used to go to a gym and work out in my previous life, when this came out, I would just put Out of the Woods on my phone and hit like repeat song. And I would listen to just that song over and over and over and over again while running on the treadmill. It was just that. I was like, this is all I need to listen to. This is fine. Like, I've got some, you know, obsessive problems, but it was the only thing that I, for months, it was like, oh yeah, I'm just listening to Out of the Woods, just on repeat. Like, that's what's going on. I did play it for my son, who's 3 and a half, yesterday. And he was like, you know, I really like this song. And I was like, I do too, Archer. Like, I really like this song.
Did he name your son after the Archer, the song 5 on Lover?
I did not. But when I went to Eras Tour, my friend was like, she played the Archer only for you. It was for no one else. And I was like, come on, I don't hate that song. But no, he's not named after them. Was a coincidence.
I think it's very nice to like name your child after a song about like a friendship fracturing and stuff like that. It's really interesting. but why is like Out of the Woods like so resonant, so like powerful? And why did he play it so much? Like,
I have no idea. It's one of those things. There's something about it that like buries itself in my brain. It just like hits something where I'm just like, okay, this is all I'm doing. I have this problem with lots of things. Like, I decided to rewatch Grey's Anatomy for some reason.
Me too.
Months ago. I'm now up to season 14 of 19. And it's like, I can't watch anything else. Like, I'm like, well, I'm still rewatching Grey's Anatomy, so I got to keep doing that right now. Like, it's that like focus where I'm just like, oh, Out of the Woods is what I'm focused on. Like, now we're just going to listen to that constantly. But I still love the song. I've listened to it more than any other song on this album, and I still love that song. Yeah, I think it's just that, like, earworminess of it. Like, and it's something that it doesn't annoy me. It just makes me want to listen to it more.
Yeah, I got to say, Out of the Woods is not only my favorite song on this album, it's my favorite of all Taylor Swift songs.
Wow. Holy.
I love this song so much. And I also just listened to it basically on repeat, except for, you know, minus the working out. I like when I hear this song, I imagine myself in Westside Pavilion Mall, just like going through the racks at H&M. Like that's what I remember about the time when I was listening to the song. But yeah, I love it so much. And I used to think that the secret sauce in the song was Ryan Tedder because of those like O's in the chorus. But actually, so I guess maybe at that time there was not as much information about all the individual songs from this album, because I feel like I would have looked it up. I just knew that he had worked on this album. But looking at it today, this is a Jack Antonoff song. Yeah. And like, of course it is. Now that because I was listening with like my good headphones today, and you can hear him in the back of the song. You can hear him.
Yeah. He's also singing like Tonight Well, We Are Young in the background too. It's like really quiet in the
mix.
I mean,
basically, like, yeah.
Yeah, he's singing that in the back. I love this. Like, this is the one of the songs that is like pop perfection, but is elevated by that poetic like storytelling of like the you took a Polaroid of us, then discovered the rest of the world was black and white, but we were in screaming color. That's so like the perfect amount of melodramatic, but not too much where it's like overbearing. And then it's like, I like this song in terms of like, it's about like temporal young adulthood being just like a collection of temporal relationships and experiences. Or just like you have this crush on this person, you have this relationship and you know, it's temporary, and you think, okay, this is the breaking point where we're going to like split off, but actually it's not yet. And that's like the push and pull is like so romantic of just like, we can't like, you know, like we can't keep away from each other just yet, even though we know it's not a good idea long term. And then it's also like, as a celebrity, it's interesting because like, this is like the moment of like privacy, that intimate moment in that hospital room is like this real moment of intimacy and privacy that they usually don't get in the world. And like, that's, I feel like that's what Taylor is looking for, while also wanting to be the most famous woman in the world at the same time. So, yeah.
The other thing I really remember about the time like that the song came out originally was like, I was very much on Tumblr at this time. And so there were so many posts like connecting different like little pieces of each song to real things from Taylor Swift's life. And so one of them was the two paper airplanes flying. I just really vividly remember this Tumblr post that like zoomed in on Harry Styles' paper airplane tattoo right next to the lyric, you know, and they put the lyrics side by side. What a time to be on the internet.
Wow.
What a time. I remember that vividly.
Yeah. Harper, what's a highlight song for you?
Oh, well, that was the one. But I'm going to also call out one that I think is not most people's like regular go-to. Wonderland. I really, really like that song.
Mm-mm.
No? No, you all are not about it. That's okay. Here's what I'm going to say about it. This song is so cheesy. This is like the corniest song of all time, but I really like it because it reminds me a lot of Enchanted from the Purple album, which is also a really cheesy song. They have like exactly the same vibe, and I don't know what it is about it, but it really works for me. And I also once used the lyrics from this song for a gift set on Tumblr that I made. So, you know, it just kind of ties back to where I was at the time that 1989 first came out. Like, the song has really stuck with me. So I'm gonna defend Wonderland.
I like Wonderland.
Thank you.
Solidarity. let girls be friends.
We found Wonderland. You and I are lost in it. We were never worse, but never better. Like, it's pretty good. It's pretty good.
It's good.
Okay.
Very Tumblr and very good.
I think like the thing like with Taylor is like, she loves being cheesy and corny. Like, she loves being like a real, like, I've watched the performance of The Man, a song I didn't like. And I love it now, like watching her like just like ham it up, like just like putting on the blazer, all that stuff. I think that song is bad cheesy though. Like, I think that one and like The Man and then You Need to Calm Down and then some other songs, they're like bad cheesy. I'm just like, this is a song for stupid babies.
It's
not Wonderland. Maybe not Wonderland isn't that bad.
No. Yeah. it's definitely not that bad. It's the Taylor cringe that I can't. There's moments and I just can't get past them. Just can't do it. Yeah. You Need to Calm Down is the worst, I think, for that, for me.
I have an alternate. I have a more crowd pleasing alternate if you'd like. But please leave that whole Wonderland bit in, because I think Taylor should know that there's one person out there that likes that song. And she's listening to this podcast. I know it. My alternate is Wildest Dreams. I really love that song. It feels, what's really interesting to me about that song is it feels like a companion piece to Style, which is also a great song. But it feels like kind of like Style is like a wistful memory that she's like reflecting on in this one. You know, it's like it's got a lot of the same themes, like the red lipstick and the, you know, the kind of like driving down the highway vibes of it all, 1950s energy. But it approaches it from a different direction. Like she's like, you know, will you remember me like this, you know, instead of being in the moment, which I think is really interesting. And it's a great sounding song.
He does like young adult erotica a few times in this album, which I really like. I think it's really effective. Like his hands are in my hair, his clothes are in my room. Like it doesn't say we have sex. We did the, you know, like it's. I think she'd be an A-tier lyricist if she did that, but like she does, it's like really just like more suggestive, and like the line about he can't keep his wild eyes off the road is like really like kind of like erotic and stuff like that. There's a lot of like eroticism in this, like subtle young adult eroticism that's really effective.
You could say horny, Andrew. You could say horny. It's fine.
I know. That's what I was going to tell him.
It's that horny though. It's like it's a little horny. Okay, fine.
Okay, horny. This is great. I love all the songs that we talked about. But Blank Space is obviously like the smash, right? Like it's like it's the track. Yeah. It's perfect pop music. Like for me, it's a song that in 20 years. At the retirement home, I will be singing this song, you know, in 2 minutes or 2 minutes after this podcast, if I go on the treadmill before I stumble, I will be singing this song. You know, like it is such an amazing, catchy, poppy tune. It's one of those tracks where even if you're trying to pretend like you're this really masculine person or this really hardened individual and you don't have, I'm too cool to be emotional, man. When you hear this song, like you're singing Blank Space.
Mm-hmm.
Like everyone is singing, you're at the jailhouse, you're singing Blank Space. You are Donald Trump about to get reelected, unfortunately. You're singing Blank Space. We're like no matter what. I mean, this Sean is your country, like not mine.
To the left.
It's not my country. But anyway, so it is for me perfect pop music. I'm glad Harper you mentioned Style, because I listening to this the first time, I'm like, okay, once Blank Space is done, that's my peak. And then when I heard Style after Blank Space, I'm like, man, that smooths it out. It's like if you had like this amazing, really filling meal, and then someone brings this well-crafted drink to wash it all down, that's Style, right? And you look at that drink, and you're like, oh my gosh, I don't want to touch it because it looks so good, but it looks so good, so let me just sip it. And you sip it the rest of your night, and it just feels like, it feels like you are in New York. Like it feels like you're actually in New York and you are at the right speakeasy. You know what I mean? So I love Style as well.
My general take on it is like, this is all about her being famous and like how she can no longer cosplay as a normal person anymore, quite really in the same way. Where she like is really hurts by the perception people have of her, like of this like serial dater who like is too emotional and can't handle a relationship. So they leave. And then she writes a revenge song about them. Like so she decides to like lean into it and say, yeah, I am that, like as a joke, but also the self-awareness of just like, yeah, I kind of do some, like there's a little truth in there, but it's still like that's overblown. I'm going to lean into it. So it's like really layered in that way that I really like. And yeah, as much as like people like worship her and love her, they're also like really ungenerous to her at the same time. So I like that this plays with that. And I like how Slut, like that song, like is, you see the actual like, yeah, this really hurts me. Like this is really hurtful that I get called this all the time. So, and it's like, it's not it's more, it's not that like dating a lot of people is bad. It's more that like people assign badness to that. And I think that's what she's being affected by. So
I think it can't, it also needs to be addressed that Blank Space has a really great video to it. And I think that really, especially Tumblr era, like how many times did I reblog gifts from that video? Like, it's just like, it came out. And I do think it was just like one of those things where it was like, everyone was just like, oh, this video is great. Like, she's so good in it. Like, it just has, it just is, it's awesome. And it like really, it's like a video that really like goes with the song and tells the story of the song in like a very literal way. But I think it works so well for that to just be like, this is what I mean.
Like, any other highlights of this?
I really like Now That We Don't Talk, just speaking of a vault track. I don't know. There's something about it. It also sort of, I also partly like it because I love CRJ so much, and it sounds like with a different production, it could be a CRJ song easily. So I think that's part of it for me. But I really enjoyed that song. That was like one of the only vault tracks that I was like, like on this album that I really like, really connected to just listening to it. And
yeah, I liked the chorus, the way the chorus went on that one, the dun 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 dun. You know that one? It's like, yeah, that's, yeah, yeah. It's a very classic Taylor.
I'm running on my treadmill right now.
Yeah. And I like the way that it distinguishes from the part where she's like, no, we don't talk. It's like, it's slightly different. I like how it all works together. Yeah. I agree though. Like, I kind of felt like with the vault songs, like, yeah, maybe there's a reason why these ones were in the vault.
Can I mention You Are in Love? Yeah. And I'll tell you why. So one, I sometimes like simple songwriting. I think I prefer it because then it allows me to just like fully understand it. And I did like the line, can you hear it in the silence? So you can hear it in the silence. Mm-hmm. I love that imagery. And then it was my favorite. I messed up the lyrics hearing it. And then when I read them, I was like, oh shit, I kind of like the way I heard it. So there's a line where she says, and why I've spent my whole life trying to put it into words. And I heard it as, and why I've spent my whole life trying to put it into yours. Like, I spent my whole life trying to put what I've crafted into your life and find a way for it to fit. And I kind of love that idea of chasing the unattainable love, and how in some ways we all do that when we are in this pursuit of happiness. It's like, can I find someone who will allow me to fit as is into whatever space they're in as is? And I love that fusion that could happen when you do find that person, if it's for forever, if it's for a moment, but that feeling of like, wow, we're actually, you know, getting all the stones. You get all the stones, and then you are able to either snap everyone away, or you're able to create a new community with that person. And so the idea of that connectivity through the power of love made me be like, oh yes, this song isn't necessarily a great song, but there's an intention that I've consumed from it that I love.
My pursuit of happiness is like selling old X-ray machines with my son, Jaden Smith.
Hey, that's a good movie idea.
That's very interesting. I'm going to spell happiness wrong.
I will say also, I like You Are in Love.
Yes, Harper!
Yeah, I've realized on this podcast that like I visualize songs a lot, which is not something I realized until I was like, you know, really thinking
walking
about
through H&M.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Scrolling on Tumblr.com.
Scrolling on Tumblr, walking through H&M. This song to me though, like it really just like, I was just thinking about that scene in The Little Mermaid, the kiss the girl scene, because I feel like the vibe of the song is like being surrounded by, you know, glowing lily pads. Like, you should be softly lit while the song is playing. Yeah, so I like, this is a vibe song for me for sure. Like, it's not doing anything, you know, like it's not like really a driving song, it's not doing anything kind of over the top, but it is creating a vibe. And it also is kind of doing that like romantic storytelling thing that I like about this album.
Shake It Off. We got to talk about that. Like, Shake It Off. Remember? Like, Yeah, I think this is just like a masterclass of production, more so than like great lyricism, although it's like great pop lyricism for sure. Like there is real power and appeal to like write a great wedding reception song, write a song that appeals to children, adults, that breaks through that barrier of masculinity and stuff like that, where we all can just have a good time and stuff. It is like a Pixar movie. It is like a Miyazaki movie of just like, this is like, this is so perfect. It's also like a sequel to Mean, where it's like, that song, she's so like fixated and like, why are you mean? And then this song is like, I'm not even going to bother with why you're mean. I'm just going to have a good time, you know, which is like the cure to like her anxiety, the cure to like all these eyes on her.
My enjoyment of the song would be so much higher without you could have been getting down to this sick.
What beat. I love
if we
that.
Just take out her doing cringe spoken word from there, I would like it so much more. I just every time it's like, and I like was bracing myself listening to it on the re-record because I was like, is she gonna make it worse? Like, is it gonna be it. More embarrassing? It's not, I guess, but I still find it very uncomfortable. Really, really don't like it. Everything else, love dancing to Shake It Off.
It's I love
great,
that part.
Delightful. A joy. I hate that part, man. Oof.
Oh, no, I love that part. Again, I don't like when Taylor does that normally, but, and that's this song, because like what you said, Andrew, about, you know, pretending to not actually, you know, shake it off and dance to this. Everyone has to kind of feel this song at some point. And it's like she's like, you know, popping out of the TV screen and saying, hey, you're trying to pretend like you don't like this, but I know you're going to shake your ass at this new beat. And you're like, okay, yeah, you're right, Taylor. I am going to, you know, so I kind of like that she's breaking that wall, that third wall, and instructing us in her most cheesy, dorky, but Taylor way, you know.
With millennials, what millennials are so concerned about is appearing cringe. You know, that's like the millennials like worst nightmare, other than like other like real problems. but that's like a lot of like millennials are just like, they don't want to like be authentic because they're afraid that they'll be authentic and then everyone will clown on them for being cringe and stuff. But I feel like what makes Taylor so great, even though if I don't like some of those songs where she does lean into the cringe too much, I do admire her ability to just go like, yeah, fuck it, I'm gonna say this like corny thing, you know, fuck it, I'm gonna write this corny song for children and stuff like that.
Is that her being authentic? Like, I feel like her authentic version is theater kid. Like, her authentic version is in Eras Tour when like she does this whole thing that looks like the fucking a high school production of The Crucible. You know, like that's like theater kid core is her vibe, her real thing, her real person.
Yeah.
I'm just not sure that saying this sick beat is actually her. And I think that's why it reads cringe to me, because it reads inauthentic to me.
I do think like her appeal is she's kind of all of it at the same time, though. She is theater kid, girl next door, sex symbol, older sister, bumbling romantic ingenue, like genius poet, and like, you know, songwriter, and like old grandma who likes to like watch CSI with her cats and stuff like that. She's kind of all of those in one, which makes her so interesting. And I think every person has multitudes, which is why I think Taylor's one of the best pop stars. She delivers the complexity of all her humanity and just like puts it in all of these albums to me. So
I don't disagree.
Can I give a quick lowlight? And only because it ties into what Aaron just said. For me, Bad Blood is a lowlight, because it's like, Taylor, really, you know, like that's really you. I feel like it's so inauthentic. And then I hate that Kendrick Lamar is on the remix, and it's like he you know, coming so off bad. Of Pimp a Butterfly, and then he's gonna do this cringy song where he's like, "All right, yeah, I'll give you a verse, Taylor." Like, it just felt like Drake should have been the one. Yeah, it felt like it should have been Drake that's there, because it's like they are both equally cringe. So Bad Blood for me is it's a bad song. It is a sick beat, but it's just not a good song.
Any other lowlights that we haven't talked about?
A lowlight for me is "slut!" exclamation point quotes Taylor version from the vault. I don't even hate the song. I feel like the promise of a song title being "slut" in quotes with an exclamation point is something completely different than is what being delivered to me. So I saw that title and I was like, hell yeah. And I listened to the song and I was like, what the fuck is going on? Like, no.
I paused my treadmill and I was like,
this isn't what I wanted. This is not what I wanted. I don't want this. If you give me "slut" exclamation point, that's what I want. I want something with that energy. I want a song that fuck you.
I want Kim Petras. I want
Kim Petras. Like, you know, or Olivia Rodrigo. Like, I want something. I want something more. I don't want what the song actually is. Yeah. So that's my big. That's my biggest like low light, and it's simply a titling not working. I think if it were called something else, I probably would have been like, yeah, that song's fine. But like, because of this, it's my enemy.
The word, like her using the word "slut" in that song, if it was titled something else, would still kind of be a surprise. Would still kind of like, oh, she usually doesn't like talk like that and stuff.
Yeah, I think alternate title, I would call it "Dressed Up." I feel like that would be a better name for it. Yeah. I like how her inflection on that line too, and she's like, "Cause I'm all dressed up." You know, I do like that. Like, I think totally. I think that's good. But I totally agree about the song title.
Yeah, it's like I could picture, you know, telling my Google Home to play "Slut," and then my Google Home is like, "Ooh, this is gonna be really risque and crazy," and it plays, and my Google Home goes, "You don't know what slut is," you know, like, it would be so disappointing that that's the thing you played on a Friday night, like when it's a Sunday afternoon track, you know.
I do like the line, like, you know, it would be worth it to be called that to be with you, like. That idea is really romantic. The idea that like she's sick of the name calling hurts her. Like there's no, I think what Taylor suffers from is like, I think being that high up, like there is no, sometimes it must feel like there's no right answer. You know, there's nothing she could do for anyone to please everyone, even though she, like with the Gaylor stuff, like the way she presented that information of just like, hey, I don't know if I feel comfortable people speculating about my sexuality and stuff like that. Like that was wrong to do for her to do, but it was wrong for her to do this. It's wrong for everything she could do, whatever choice she makes is going to affect someone negatively as someone at the top. So for her to go or for she'll be perceived negatively. And then for her to go, well, I'm going to go for this relationship, even though I'll be called this, you know, I think is really romantic.
Yeah, she's like, if this was Selling Sunset, she would be part Amanza, part Chrishell. No, for real, yeah. Right? Because Amanza, you know what I'm talking about, Eric?
I do.
Because Amanza tries so hard to just, you know, create family and connect people. And so many times she butchers it because her efforts go left all the time. And then at some point, Taylor, I think, decided, you know what? I'm going to be my Chrishell era where it's just about me pursuing what I want, how I want it. I won't compromise my happiness. I might be seen a particular way, but fuck it. It's my life. And then it's like, because of that, you get like that big character energy and it actually helps to amplify how awesome you are in some ways. So she's Crescenza. Crescenza?
I love that. Yep.
Real quickly, I gotta talk about "Clean." That's this is the last thing we'll conclude. "Clean" is so great. Like, I love the line, like, 10 months sober, I'm getting over it, and then 10 months older. Like, that's such a great way to like view that. Like, that's like one of the Taylor Swift turns of phrases that just like blow my mind. Of just like, that is so beautiful. Like, 10 months sober, 10 months older. Like, you got older and wiser through your sobriety. That's such a really, yeah. And like in the context of a relationship too, of like that 10 month period where you're so lonely and sad and felt like you were drowning, that made you older and smarter and wiser and more compassionate and stuff like that, ready for the next love to experience.
I like that song a lot. It has some of like the most like Taylor Swift lyrics in it, I think, of like maybe any Taylor Swift song, because she's like a wine strained dress I can't wear anymore and hung my head as I lost the war, like all that stuff. That's like just so much Taylor Swift imagery going on in the song.
So yeah, there's a review of 1989 Taylor's version. Let's go through final thoughts and ratings. The way this works is we'll rate this out of 10 with a fun metric at the end. Yeah, who would like to go first?
I can go first. It's a great pop album. It hits where it needs to hit. There are very few misses. It's Taylor kind of saying, I'm the GOAT, and this is my GOAT journey. It's a great year, 1989. She's in the 80s. I was born in the 80s too, so I relate to that. I'm going to give this album 9.5. Hey, out of 10.
Albert.
I mean, just shake it off.
Yeah.
Never mind.
I got it. I was there with you.
I'm going to give it 9.5. Shake off that previous rating attempt out of 10.
Okay, Tail. Enough. Anyway. Yeah, I'll go, like, because I'm a man. I'm like, my opinion is not that as important. Yeah, like, I think it's great. I think I'll give it 9.5 months sober out of 10. It's pretty elite pop. And any difference from the original, I just kind of like clock and go, huh, that's weird, and then just move on. I think it's so good. I think it's pristine pop. It's perfect. I do think she does more interesting work, but what she's going for in terms of just like, this is where she is in this part of her life and she's executing it perfectly, I think it's great. So 9.5 months sober.
1989 is my favorite album. 1989 Taylor's version tacks on a few songs that I just wish weren't there. So for that reason, it's going to knock it down just a smidgen. I'm going to give this 9 out of 10 boys and boys and girls and girls.
1989 is my favorite Taylor album. 1989 Taylor's version is not at this moment. So I have to agree. I think I'm going to go 920 stitches in the hospital room.
920 stitches. So yeah, that was our episode of 1989. Taylor's version. Thank you so much, Aaron. This was a lot of fun. Thank you for. I was in such a wild mood today, so I appreciate you like enduring that. By the way, that's like a great like you know way to dismount a podcast is like saying thanks for enduring me.
I like it.
Well, thank you. So, Aaron, thank you so much. Anything you like to plug?
Just life. Just plug life.
Motherhood.
No. Yeah, no. Yeah. I'm just a mom.
You're a cool mom. You're a cool mom. Like Mean Girls.
I'm just everywhere at Aaron Mallory Long. That's the only thing I got to plug. That's where I do everything.
And yeah, thank you so much. You can follow me at Andrew Ambrose Lee on Instagram. You can follow Michael at Lemon Taco on Instagram. You can follow Stenley at Snap Ass Sten on Instagram and Harper at Harping About on Instagram, and follow the show at IBMTLTT on Instagram and TikTok. And Aaron, what music would you like to close us out with?
The only album that I've been listening to other than this for this podcast is Chapel Roan. So Feminomenon, please.
All right, thanks so much, everybody. Have a good day. Click.
Can you play a song with a fucking beat? Hit it like Rum Pom Pom. Get it hot like Papa John. Make a bitch go on and on.